a woman. She told me to call her Julia, her real name, when we were at home. I slept in the guest room. She said I was free to decorate it, but it is no need when you know you will just pack up and go. I kept my box of mess from the old house in the closet. The microscope came in handy when I had nothing to do. That was goodbye. Word got out at school that I was staying with the art teacher. Some boy I do not know good had something cute to say about it, just like me staying with Julia had something to do with her putting Check Plus Wonderfuls on my art. Ha! He could shut his mouth or I would punch him, is what I said. I got up close in his face and he did not say anything back. He better watch out for me, is what else I said. I am strong as an ox. Me and Julia and Roy laughed and carried on right much. Every Sunday we would all three lay on the floor drawing each other with blue hair or two noses or something silly, you name it. Or we would all take a part reading Prince Valiant and stand up and strike a pose when it is your turn to read. That was the best. The warmer it got, the more we stayed in the yard. She said it was good I loosened up. We would run around, and she would tell me to let it all hang out. Let your hair down, good golly, Miss Molly, let it all hang out. Go with the flow, she would say. Make up a tune and throw in some words and go with the flow. I had no idea people could live like that. If you did not know them, you would call them off the rocker, but they were just happy, she said, with a big H. You could see it break out sometimes, and she would grin and say, "Don't you just love the sunshine?" Or she and Roy would nibble on each other and speak some French. Sometimes she would grab me and say, "You are so neat." One day I asked her what they were doing here and where they were from. At first she said Pluto. If I did not know so much about space, I would have said, "Okay," and went right on with my business. But I said, "You are not from outer space. Where are you really from?" She said she could be straight with me. Both Roy and I were raised in the Northeast. We always liked the South, so when we finished college, we decided to settle down here and have a family. Me, where I could teach and Roy could do his thing in peace. Oh. Our dream had always been to have a quiet place in the country, far away from all the city hassles. Our minds were so polluted by city life that we needed all the space and serenity to find ourselves. Oh. She lived in the 60s. She used to be a flower child, but now she is low-key so she can hold a job. She went on and said when she was young, like me, she wanted to save the world. I asked her from what? From people like your father, is what she told me. You mean there is more like him? You mean he is not the only one? I need to know. Once I got him in my head, it was hard to shake him out. I mostly worried about what he might do about me making off with all the cash money. When Julia said there was more like him, I shuddered to think how God let him and the rest slip through. The day he made my daddy, he was not thinking straight. My daddy was a mistake for a person. The times me and Julia and Roy worked in the garden, I did not think about him but of my mama and the way she liked to work in the cool of the morning. She nursed all the plants and put even the weeds she pulled up in little piles along the rows. My job was to pick the piles up and dispose of them. I was small my own self and did not have the sense to tell between weeds and plants. I just worked in the trail my mama left. When the beans were grown ready to eat, she would let me help pick. Weeds do not bear fruit. She would give me an example of a bean that is grown good to hold in one hand while I picked with the other. If I was not sure if a particular bean was at the right stage, I could hold up my example of a bean to that bean in question and know. It took a long time to pick that way, but you have that sort of time while she is humming. I know I have made being in the garden with her into a regular event, but she was really only well like that for one season. You see, if you tell yourself the same tale over and over again enough times, then the tellings become separate stories, and you will generally fool yourself into forgetting you only started with one solitary season out of your life. That is how I do it. Then they told me one day my birthday was coming up, so what did I have in mind to do? That got my goat because I had forgot and could have turned 11 without my knowledge. Do I have to decide now is what I need to know? No, but do give us some time to plan, okay? What do you think I should do? What would you do if you was me? She wanted to know what I usually do. I always turn the next age during the day, and then I go to bed and feel different. How about a little celebration? That is not for me. The only girl I know good to invite is Starletta, and she by herself is not a party. Sure she is. She came to my house. Starletta came on a Saturday morning, and she brought the present and the little town just like I requested. She was proud because she had only lost the post office and the fire marshal. I took her right into my room and unfolded the town. I tried to trick her into letting me keep the town and she keep the present she brought. I figured it being wrapped up would appeal to her, but she was not paying attention to me, but to looking all under the bed and examining all that was not nailed down. This was party enough for Starletta. She did not need a cake or a matinee movie to have a fine time. She liked the idea of scratchy carpet on the floor, and all into the closet under the bed she crawled on her stomach. She was in love with rubbing all her body parts on my floor. When she got through touching in my room, we loaded up and went to the movies. Julia dropped us off and said to be good and wait inside after it was over. Starletta was the only colored girl at the movies, and she was mine. When it got our turn to get tickets, Starletta could not produce her dollar. Oh, God, I said to Starletta and pulled her off the line where I could search her. I told her to stand still and be lucky that I am not the police that will rough you up a little in the process. I searched all up in her shirt and around the rim of her drawers where a mama will usually pin a dollar. I finally found the dollar rolled up and stuck down in her sock. She was better than I expected her to be in the movies. She squirmed a little at the start, but when she got used to the dark and the music, she went to sleep. Roy had a cake on the kitchen table when we got home. It featured my name, Ellen, in curvy letters like a bakery, but Roy swore he made it. It tasted the way you might expect pink to be. They scared my pants off telling me to make a wish so loud. I wished I could make the wish later when I could think to myself. Starletta stared at her slice until I told her it was food and to dig in. She did not understand how slices and modest servings go, so I had to tell her when it was time to quit eating. Save some to take home with you is what I told her. It made me grin to think of Starletta having some birthday cake after her supper. She took a hunk with the N part out of my name. The cake left the table, and here come the presents. It was just like Christmas, and you know all the things I got then, and now just look at all the presents on this table. Julia said they went all out. Starletta waved and pointed to the one she brought, so I opened it first. It was not in a box, but wrapped as is. Her mama had made me a Dutch girl pillow to stick on my bed. You can always tell one by the hat and the shoes. Tell your mama I thank her, I said to her. Say it over in your head and out loud so it will not leave your head. Roy and Julia gave me a round thing with colored pencils stood up in circles and circles until the white one at the top in the middle you used to make clouds with is the point by itself. You will always grab for that one first. But the pencils were not all. There was oil paint. We do not even have paint like this at school. I said, Julia, this is like your paint. By God, they are oil paints that do not wash out or off with water, and to change a picture idea after you have started one, you just have to tear the whole business up and start over. You can use them to paint something the way it is supposed to be, not all watered down but strong. I want to thank everybody for the party and the gifts, and Starletta especially for coming. Old Starletta is amazed at all the pencils and little tubes spread out over the table. She would smear her whole self up like a trick-or-treat Indian if I let her. I told her, do not even think about it. I am serious about this art supply. You can have my old crayons if you need something to ruin. When she was standing at the door for Roy to ride her home, I gave her the crayons and her town. I did not ride to get her or to take her home because Roy and Julia were afraid of who I might see on the way. They lived miles from him, but Starletta is a neighbor. I thought about him, too, and we all walked outside to say goodbye. You tell your mama. My daddy came my way. I did not go his. He stayed in that house, I know, stewing, thinking how to wring my neck. He came to school one day during nap time. We always put our heads on the desk to rest for a while. I cannot sleep in that position, so I fake it. There is nothing to do but fill your pencil tray up with spit. The day my daddy came to school, nobody got a good nap. My room, then, was on the front of the school that looks like a red shoebox. I heard a car sound outside and knew without thinking long that it had to be him. My whole self knew at the same time, and my eyes had spots I dreaded to look at him. If I had seen this on television, he might have looked funny, but since it was me in real life, I could not see the humor. The teacher had to be on coffee break, so I took over. "Everybody sit back down and be quiet," I said loud. They all wanted to see what was outside. He did not know exactly what room I was in, so he made a general announcement for the whole building. "Get the hell out here," is what he told me to do. He had parked his truck in the flower bed the special handicapped children had planted. Later that day, when they saw the mashed ground and the obvious dead marigolds, they each threw separate little fits, the kind you would throw if somebody said the end of the world was coming up shortly. He stepped out of the truck waving some cash money and telling Ellen Dammit to come back, he would pay for it. Then my teacher came back in the room and looked at me like I invited him. She told the children to finish their naps, but who would sleep when that man Ellen's daddy is outside? You have to wonder what they will remember when they are big. A man coming to school, a man waving dollars and screaming, one man, my daddy, waving dollars, yelling and undoing his britches during nap time. I told the teacher I could make him stop. Just give me a pistol and then go out there and scoop him up. It does not even make me squint to see that in my head anymore. I yelled for him to put his dollars on the ground and go back home. There was no sense in him leaving with the money. When he heard me, he stopped still like a bird dog when you blow the silent whistle. He wondered where my sound was coming from. The police came in a while and slapped the bracelets on. We all watched him go away. Somebody sent for Julia, and she came to me finally. Her art room is in the back, apart from the rest of the school, so she had not seen the time, but she pulled my head to her stomach and said to let's go home. When we got home, I stopped feeling Daisy and wondered if he had left the money. She took the dollars out of her purse, and then I had them. Hot damn, I thought. It was back normal for a while until Julia and Roy came in my room for a chat. He did most of the talking. She mainly patted the bed beside her and held her fingertips up to her nose holes. He told me the court believes you should be with your family now. I do not believe it. It sounds crazy to me because the three of us could pass for a family on the street. But it was true, and the next week I went in front of the judge. Julia bought me a dress for court we both hated. She said it is not exactly our style, but there are some times when you have to play the game she learned the hard way. It had a sailor neck collar, and she said, here is the worst part. Lace stockings and black padding leather shoes. Conformity, she said. When we went in the court, I thought staying in the middle of Roy and Julia was best. My daddy was over there in the middle of two police, but you still have to be careful. And lo and behold, my mama's mama. I had not seen her since the graveyard, and there she is again to watch this time. They talked mainly above my head. Usually I can jump in and hang on to what you are saying, but I felt so dazy in my head again that not a word made sense. Then the judge in the box, who was extra old to have a job, talked right to me. He said he had grandchildren of his own and could certainly understand her point. Whose point, I needed to know. Then I caught on it was she, my mama's mama. She was it. I knew when she looked down the row at me with the kind of eyes that say, ha-ha, I got you now. All the arrangements were made, they said, so why bring me in here and do this in front of everybody like Julia who wants to scream, she says. What do you do when the judge talks about the family, society's cornerstone, but you know yours was never a Roman pillar but is and always has been crumbly old brick? I was in my seat frustrated like when the teacher makes a mistake on the chalkboard and it will not do any good to tell her because so quick she can erase it all and on to the next problem. He had us all mixed up with a different group of folks. On Sunday, the food at my new mama's is as good as it can be. The only thing is, you have to go to church before you can have one bite. Usually a child will make a fuss about going to church, but we do not. You might expect us to tug at our hats and kick the pews, but we know better. We behave like we are somebody because my new mama gets part of the collection money every week. That goes for our support, our food, and clothes. You go in that church and act genuine. Even if you think what he has to say that week is horse manure, or even if you believe it is a lie, you sit there and be still. Worse could happen than for you to sit for an hour. You could be where you came from. I mostly read the stained glass windows and wonder about all who they are in memory of. We have windows like the Pope has, but his are art. I know all about that. The preacher says that today, yes, even on this very day, his word will free us from the torments and distractions of the mind. It is hard to be a hypocrite. I look at the preacher and at my new mama and fix my face to look like hers. We all sit lined up with faces like hers. She says to be appropriate. It is hard, too, when you want to smile at the collection plates set up on the altar spilling over with folding money. Every Sunday she gets her fair share. Reach down and give, I want to announce to the sinners. All of us but the baby boy, Roger, is expected to be here on Sunday. Some teenage women tend to him in the nursery. He is much like Starletta, except he is white and a baby boy. We always get in here and to our places before the organ prelude. That way folks can see us and rest sure that their money is well spent. Dora and her mama attend this church on special holidays like the Lord's Supper and Thanksgiving. They both glide all down the row and wish they had mink stoles to flag in our faces. They stay too dressed. When I had to live with them a while, we would come to this church even before I learned the name of my new mama. Of all the ladies in the church that could make into a new mama, she, of all people, was the one for me. When I got back to Dora's house, I thought about her and all that she looked like to me. I watched her in the churchyard when she would walk straight and square down the steps like she might be a queen or a lady going to be executed with dignity. Down the steps she would go by the gospel ladies, quiet, and I always tried to catch her eyes. Lord, eyes that would flush all the ugly out of your system and leave in you too much air to breathe. She was certainly an oddity, and I had to step back when I saw her and was not looking for anything in particular, but knew her time was all that I needed to grab. I would think when I went to the house and write down ways and tricks of how to have her. Now it is done. It worked, and I pat myself on the back each Sunday. I walk down the steps close as I can be up next to her. When or if you come to my house now after church, you will smell all the things that have been simmering on low. It has been waiting for me and me for it. When it turned summer, I went to my mama's house. All that summer was a bad time, and no matter how hard I try, I still remember her sad. I told Roy and Julia I had rather go to the reform school or even get on the chain gang than go stay with her. I did not know her good, but she caused a knot in me just thinking about her face. They said they sympathized, but there was not a thing they could do anymore. They said they would see me on visits, which we did not have because Julia got fired and they had to move away. She sends me a letter now when you least expect it. It makes me slow down and sad to think about my mama's house. All the time was like a record you play on the wrong speed. Before I left, I packed all of my things that would fit in one box and wheeled the rest to Julia and Roy. Some of these things might come in handy, I said to them. Maybe it is wasteful to scatter your worldly goods from hither to yon, but I never wanted to have more than would tie up or tape down in the box. All I really cared about accumulating was money. I saved a bundle. My mama picked me up in her long car that was like the undertaking car, only hers was cream. I told Roy and Julia one more time I did not need to go. If we have to live together, the least you could do is talk to me like you know I am in your car, is what I thought to say to her. I figured she would warm up to me. But all she asked on the way to her house was when does school start again? Lord, it just ended, and I sure am looking forward to the summer at your house, is what I said for the icebreaker. I ask you when school starts. I do not need the commentary, is what she said back to me hot. So September, I said September. I said my answer quick and on time like the army way. I saluted in my head. I just kept guessing she was nervous around strangers and she would soften up. But if I knew then all I know about her now, I would have jumped out of her car moving and hightailed it. For a while, I figured she might have liked the idea of having a girl around the house, but when she saw my actual self in my box, she changed her mind. You cannot blame her. I am not exactly a vision, but Lord, I have good intentions that count. I decided I would make the best of the situation because you can generally adjust to somebody with money to burn. She might be a witch, but she has the dough, is what I decided to tell myself. But by July, I called her the damn witch to myself, and all the money she had did not matter anymore. That is something when you consider how greedy I am. I was there for a week when she said she had found something to do with me. Finally, I thought. On the first Monday in June, she woke me up with the sun and said, "It is time to go to work." She has found a job for me, I thought. I figured we were going out to deliver the newspapers. She would drive and I could pitch the papers out the car window. But she drove me instead to the cotton field and said to come home for lunch. Ask a nigger what to do is what she said before she drove off. Five or six people were already chopping and they were way far down the rows and not noticing me. I just looked. Then the biggest lady yelled, "You better get on a row." "And I'll be damned if I'll do it," I said to myself. "You better get on a row," she yelled again. "The boss lady left you here to work, not to stand, and I needs to make sure you do it. Now get you a hoe. When I gets to the end of mines, I'll catch you up to the rest of us." That was the first thing I had heard reasonable, so I started chopping my row. I lived on a farm with my mama and daddy, but they hired colored people to do my part of the slave labor. I was too small to work right. I used to play in the fields with Starletta and watch her mama and daddy chop, but I never figured it would one day be me. Lord, how did they stand it so hot, I wondered. The big lady helped me catch up to them, and they all told me their names that sounded alike except for hers, Mavis. All I could think to say after my name was, did they know Starletta's mama and daddy? They go to the same church. We started chopping again, and I did not feel sick until the afternoon. I had to sit down, and every time I tried to stand up, I just had to sit back down. Mavis fanned me with her apron, and I felt much cooler. Then she said, what the boss lady is up to is her business, but it must be a mighty bad debt you is out here working off. There is no sense in a white child working in this heat. I can hardly stand at my own hot self. I'll feel better in a minute. You sit here and rest some, and you is not wearing a hat on your head. What you think, that sun won't fry your brain? Lord, child. The next morning I got a straw hat out of the garden shed and wore it all day. I felt cooler all over and did not get sick anymore. While I worked, I mainly counted in my head or recited the poems I knew good to myself. You can keep time with the hoe chopping around a plant. It breaks up the day that way. Whenever I fell behind, Mavis would catch me up. She said they were born to chop, and that is how they could work so fast and steady. She would say that and laugh, but it was not funny to me. One day, when I had gotten to know her pretty good, she asked me why my mama's mama sent me out to the fields and why I was not in vacation Bible school, or at least somewhere out of the sun. I told her exactly what I was told. My mama's mama said I was under her feet, and besides that, she could not bear to look at my face day in and day out. Also, she said I might learn a thing or two out there, which I did. I bet she never counted on me learning everything old Mavis had to teach me. The hotter the summer got, the more Mavis loved to talk, and I loved to listen. One day she said flat out, "You look just like your mama. Lord, child, you got that same black hair all down your back. Did you know my mama?" "Yes, child. I was raised up beside her on this farm. I knowed her as good as I know my own self. I never knowed anybody sweet like your mama, smart as a whip, too." "She was?" "Lord, yes," she said and laughed at the same time. "Did her mama make her work, too?" "Lord, no, she won't cut out for hot work. Her mama made the other ones work like dogs, but not your mama. You don't plan to tell the boss lady I've been telling you anything, do you?" "Oh, no," I said, so maybe she would tell me more. She told me enough that summer to let me know I was not the only one who thought my mama's mama was off the rocker. She said the boss lady had always been peculiar, but ever since my mama died, she had acted touched. I did not need to ask touched with what, because I already knew. But still, it is hard to believe in your head what you feel in your heart about a person, especially somebody you know good. I figured one day I would do some encyclopedia research and see if there is a name for what ailed my mama's mama. But that was like trying to look up a word you don't know how to spell. What would I look under? Meanness? Angry? Just crazy? Then I figured it was a little bit of everything. And anyway, my family never was the kind that could fit into a handy category. By July, I was like a boy. When I started out, both my hands were a red blister, but then I toughened up good. I thought while I chopped from one field to the next how I could pass for colored now. Somebody riding by here in a car could not see my face and know I was white. But that is okay now, I thought to myself, of how it did not make much of a difference anymore. The whole time I stayed at my mama's mama's, I thought about giving that judge a piece of my mind. Look, you made a mess. Now clean it up and put me on the right road, is what I would say to him. One solution I figured was to sell off some household items. It is hard for somebody like myself to be surrounded by all that and not think about how much cash it could turn into. I could make a catalog of her merchandise and let folks pick them out, an ashtray, some brandy snifters, or one of the many vases. Piece by piece, her house would disappear, and she would be unable to do a single thing. But I would be on Easy Street. I would keep her tied up in this particular plan. You would think that when you get older, you get weak, but that was not true in her case. Meanness made her quick like a jungle animal. I started to think she wanted me around as a substitute for my daddy, and each day I was not exactly him, but just enough of his eyes or nose to tease her. Oh, she boiled violent inside. It must have been hard for her to keep in mind that I was the girl Ellen and not a man she wanted to be alive by her so she could kill, but wanted him alive too so she could work her power on him. And she had some power. Without saying one word, she could make my bones shake, and I would think of ghost houses and skeletons rattling all in the closets. Her power was the sucking kind that takes your good sense and leaves you limp like an old zombie. That was how I felt some days, like an old monster zombie who was a girl a while back. But I got my fire back in me now. She would take all the feeling she needed from somebody and then stir it up with some money and turn the recipe back on you. The money made it sweet, and without it she might have just been another mean old lady, but set up in her big house she could make the devil scared of her. She wanted me so hard to be like him. She reminded me all the time how me and him favored and acted alike. I never told her how Mavis said I looked just like my mama. Sometimes she talked so strong to me that I had to check in the mirror to see if I had changed into him without my knowing or feeling it. Maybe her wishing so hard had made it so, I thought. I decided I would jump off the bridge if I was different from my old self. Maybe he did rub off on me. I still wonder sometimes if I am fine myself or if I have tricked myself into believing I am who I think I am. So many folks thinking and wanting you to be somebody else will confuse you if you're not very careful. It gives me nerves to worry about me. My mama's mama would shake a little like this, too. I hide my hands under my desk if it happens at school. It is not enough to notice good. Her hands shook right much, though, when she told me about my daddy dying, but she managed to slap me with one. She said, "Your bastard of a daddy is dead," and then she hit me in the face. That does not make sense, but that is what she did. I had not planned to cry over him when he died. I had practiced it all so many times that all I wondered was if he had died one of the ways I had planned, all varieties of accidents and unfortunate mishaps. But he was somebody I knew who was dead. I felt the way you feel when they say a star or an old president is dead and you feel sorry for a flash when you remember his face and think about how you could go quick as a wink. She was looking in my eyes for a reason to slap me again, but I was determined not to give her one. "Go ahead and cry for your damn daddy," she got in my face and said to me. "Go ahead and cry. Just make sure you cry more than you did for your mama." Why did she say that to me, I wondered, and reached up to catch a tear I felt had just rolled over my eyelid. But she grabbed my shaking hand with her hand shaking and said to let that be the last tear I ever shed. I still wonder how long she meant that rule to last. You can bet we did not go to his funeral. I know they had one because my daddy's brother Rudolph brought me the flag they had laid on his coffin. He got the flag because he was in the war. I did not go to the funeral, but I imagine how bad the preacher must have felt to put my daddy in the same ground with good people and babies born dead who get to be angels, and beside my mama. They put her in a box, too, and him in a box, so shut the lid down hard on this one and nail it with the strongest nails. Do all you can to keep it shut and him in it always. Time would make him meaner to me if he could get out and grab me again. Go ahead and look, said the magician. I do not want to look. It is all illusion. Look in the box and see what is in there. I do not want to see. Go ahead, said the magician. There is nothing to be afraid of. Everything is vanished. See, there is nothing in the box. Where did it go? I need to know. Oh, I suppose they put him in the hole and everybody walked away without talking just like before, and they will wish they were already at home. Rudolph came straight from the graveyard to my mama's. She sent me to my room and told me to stay there until he left, which I did not do, but I stood in the hall and spied. She had some secret business with him. He came to the house now and then, and she always told me to leave. I knew that what I was not supposed to hear was most likely juicy, so I always listened in. What are you bringing that trash here for? She met him at the back door and asked. He said in a hangdog way he thought Ellen should have it. I watched her get stiff, and then she spit on the flag he had folded up in a neat triangle and held to her like a present. Then she said to him, after all the money you have taken from me and you have the audacity to bring that bastard's business into my house, you should be shot. Rudolph had the nerve I would not have and said he only took what she offered, all that was due him. She called him a worm and a farm boy too big for his britches, and if you don't think I can ruin you too, then just hide and watch me. You just remember whose name that dead bastard's farm is in, and while you're at it, take a drive to the courthouse and check out the name on your own damn deed. Then come back here and tell me who is running this show. Rudolph stood there like the farm boy too big for his britches that his teacher had just unbuckled and dropped around his ankles so the paddle could sting and snap his behind. Then he turned and ran out the door. He left the flag, though. That night I woke up from my sleep because I heard something outside, and I looked out my window and saw her standing by a wood fire she had made herself, poking what was left of some stripes farther into the flame. I did not go back to sleep that night because I kept thinking over and over again about the encyclopedias. Oh, the froze sneeze and the poems. I wanted to rub my hands on the pages again. The flag on fire did not matter, but just those encyclopedias. They might not have ever been mine, but I believe that much touching and looking had made them into mine. That is what I thought to myself while she poked her flame. I do not know why I thought she would be happy when my daddy died. She was the kind of woman you cannot even die to suit. She would swear you did it to spite her. We all did things against her, she said. She even fired the colored household help because she swore they were an evil conspiracy and were stealing out from her nose. And when they were gone, it was just her and me to look after her, not the other way around like you might expect. That did not surprise me because I had just about given up on what you expect. I just lived to see what would happen next. At least taking care of her took me out of the fields. When she got sick with the flu, all she wanted to do was talk. That was about all she was able to do. I called the doctor who checked her over and told me to feed her particular foods, which I sent Mavis's husband to the store after. She told the doctor to leave and never come back, and on his way out the door, he could unload all the silverware and jewelry he'd stole. He just chuckled like he thought she might be joking with him. Ha! Then she said, I don't need no doctor with Ellen here to nurse me, which I did the best way I could. She wanted to talk mostly about my daddy, and most of what she said didn't make any sense. It was like listening to three different conversations at one time. She would ask questions and answer for all three folks. But one day she got up on her elbows and said to me, clear like she'd come out of a long fever, "Ellen, you helped him, didn't you?" Why did she say that to me, I thought. Lord, did I do the wrong thing? But he said she would just sleep, and if that didn't make me quiet, then the knife by his hand would. And yes, it is easy to see him now in the fog of his not knowing she could be dead soon. It is like when you are sick and you know all the things you ever ate or just wanted to eat are churning in you now, and you will be sick to relieve yourself, but the relief is a dream you let yourself believe because you know the churning is all there is to you. "Go ahead, push it in," said the magician. "Push it in and turn it a few times and see if it hurts. See, you didn't feel a thing." And through all the churning and spinning, I saw her face, big clown smile looking down at me while she said to me, "You best take better care of me than you did of your mama." I stayed off by myself and figured most everything out. I may not have the story exactly straight, but what I do not say or know to say is just not important enough anyway to change the main things that happened. Knowing or thinking I knew all she did helped me get along at her house. Now I know what they mean by stumbling around in the dark. When I found out her story, I figured I'd march myself right up to Hollywood and get a Sherlock Holmes job. It took some real figuring to piece it all together, and mainly I had to keep myself from adding more to the story than actually happened. That comes from reading too many old stories. My mama's mama kept a tab on my daddy and me through Rudolph and Ellis. Then Ellis died. I do not know how he died, but I want to say murder. I know that is made up just because the story would go a lot smoother if he was murdered with a piano wire by my mama's mama, who had on a black hood. But all that counts is that he died and Rudolph was left to keep up with how me and my daddy operated. He reported to my mama's mama everything he heard old men say about us while they chewed their cud at the store. He reported what the wives said about us while they squeezed their loaf bread or hung out the Monday wash. "Yeah, old Ellen runs up and down the road with her little nigger friend," they might say. "Yeah, old Ellen is always bothering so-and-so to give her a ride home from the grocery store." "There ain't no telling what goes on in that house when the sun goes down," they must have said. And Rudolph would hear a day's worth and trot back to my mama's mama like a yard dog with a fresh sparrow dangling from his mouth. Then she would pat his head and hand him one envelope for us and one for him because he did such a good job. I could not swear all that is true because it sounds so extraordinary when I run it back through my head, but as odd as I think it sounds, I feel in my bones that I am on the right track. I do not know all about her going to the bank and getting the farm and how she got all the land from Rudolph, but all that counts, like I said before, is that she did it, and then you can move on to why she did it. It must have got her goat when old Ellen ran away from him. That was very good for me, but bad for him, because that is when she let go everything she had been holding back, just because she did not have it in her to starve a girl. The way she arranged it was she kept giving Rudolph the envelopes to drop in the mailbox, but she put less and less money in them each week. Only a little money each time, so all he could think to do with such a small amount was waste it fast. He could have ruined his own self in time, but she was tired of waiting for him to wither up. He would waste that little bit of money so in the middle of wasting he might forget his life had always been bad and was getting worse all the time. I always figured that a little imagination to go along with the money would have stretched a dollar here or there. But he was fresh out of hope, as he liked to say about the wishing and spitting in your hands to see which one fills up first. He was as weak as water, I have heard more than one person say about him, and that is just what you do not need to be if you have dealings with my mama's mama. She would come rolling in a wave over you and leave you there on your behind choking on the thing you had intended to say. And she would keep coming with her flood and stand laughing at you struggling in the waves of your forgetting. That is how she confused my daddy. I maybe should be sad and pray over him when I picture him fighting long distance with her, but I blame him for making his own self weak enough to be beat to death by a little old lady, no matter how mean she is. Men and daddies are not supposed to be like that, but if you pet and groom your strong heart long enough, you will turn it into a damn lapdog heart. But on the outside, you still try to show off how brave you are. All she had to do was wait for Rudolph to drag up his last bird, but it was a flag instead. God, if I ever told Julia all of this, she would say it blows my mind, which is exactly what happened to my daddy. He had a vein or a head fuse explode, so he died. It makes my own head hurt just to think about it. Her flu got worse when it got cold outside. She'd sweat and then yell at me because she was freezing to death. I had trouble keeping up with her changing so much. That syrup I had been feeding her ran out, and she swore the medicine had been making her sick all along. You cannot reason with somebody like that. I just did the best I could with what I had to work with. I never let her get up and go to the toilet by herself. You let an old person do their business alone, and next thing you know, you have a broke hip on your hands. I never let her take a tub bath either. It is too easy to slip. I washed her off one limb at a time. Each day I could feel the meanness draining out of her body, but her mind was still wound up tight as a tick. She never complained about the care I gave her, just about my eyes. "You got that bastard's eyes," she would say to me when I washed off her face, so I would shut them. I cannot help my eyes is what I wanted to say to her, but I just said to myself, I will look after this one good, and I will not let a soul push me around this time. But what if I let her die tonight? What would folks think about us here in this house together, and her dead and me alive? Lord, it can happen because it has happened before, but she won't die while I'm in charge. I will let her sleep, but I'll wake her up if she starts to die. I hope she can give me some warning. That is what I should have done with the first one. Go ahead and stir yourself awake. I might have woke you by accident, but all the good sleeping I let you have should count for something. Go ahead and cough hard. You wake up now. I want to ask you a question.
Like what?
Well, I know why you hated my daddy, but what about me? Why can't you see I am not like him? All I know is when I look in your face, I see that bastard and everything he did to my girl. But I did not do anything, I say back to her, and wonder at the same time why I said that, because we all know it is not what I did to her, but what I did not do for her. And her gate is flung open, and there is nothing left but the hearing of all she has left to say to me. Why, you little bitch, you set up in that house like the world owed you a living, in cahoots with your damn daddy. I know all that went on. You laid up all in that house with your daddy's buddies. I'm surprised you don't have some little nigger baby hanging off your titty, but you left before I could get the both of you at one pop. You and your daddy let her take them pills and more than likely drove her to do it, and then you let her die. And then somebody comes to my house and tells me how they found you all laid up next to her like a little idiot. But hi-ho, I got you now. You might have run out before that bastard got what was coming to him, but I swear you will never stop paying for your part. All the people who said things about me were wrong, I told her. But it was no use, just like when you were standing there with the smoking pistol you found beside the bleeding man, and you tried to tell the police you found him there, and you have a good reputation, and this is just a terrible accident. So I decided to spend the rest of my life making up for it, whatever it was. Whatever I decided one day I actually did.
One day, if I ever sorted the good from the bad and the memories of what I wish was true. You just remember you are mine now, she said, and she eased back down on her bed and slept. And while she slept, I read by the window or watched her bed until it was an ocean and the blankets were waves I had never seen except in my head. And I thought of how far I am from the water rolling, but I am here with an old woman breathing at the same time with her. I could wake her up and ask, have you ever been to the ocean? But I already know the answer. She has not. You can tell. It would humble you, I whispered to her sleeping, if you for one time stood by something stronger than yourself. My mama's mama sleeps most of the time. All she says clear for me to understand is you best take better care of me than you did of your mama. And each time she says that, I promise loud I will, so we might not hear the other one who says kill her. But I did not kill her, just like I did not kill my mama or my daddy. She died in spite of me. I tried to make her keep breathing, and when she stopped, I blew air in like I should have. She did not live, but at least I did not slip into a dream beside her. I just stood by the bed and looked at her dead with her face pleasant now to trick Jesus. I said to her, the score is 2-1 now. I might have my mama's soul to worry over, but you've got my daddy's and your own. The score is 2-1, but I'll win. I stood over her, hoping she was the last dead person I knew for a while. Wake up, it's time to go to school, my new mama yells. It is good to feel refreshed on Monday morning, not like when you are in a job you hate. I sit up in my bed and flip the pillow over for the cool side. Sometimes I even say to myself, this feels very good, and I count up what I like about the way I am living now. Number one is that I do not plan to leave here until I am old. If somebody does try to make me leave, I will chain my arms and legs to the bedpost and throw a fit. Number two and three is that I do not owe anybody any money, and I can count on food to eat that I do not always have to fix or be guilty eating. And the best one, number four, is my new mama saying good morning to me like she means it. All that bothers me about Monday morning is school. Julia always said it took her a while to get back in the groove. Monday is music day. I cannot carry a tune, so I do not sing out loud for somebody to laugh at me. I just move my lips to the words and try to look eager and in tune. There is enough people to sing so that my not singing does not make a drop in the bucket. We always go to the auditorium to sing because that is where they keep the school piano, and we always march past Starletta's classroom. I wave to her, and she sticks out her tongue at me. Lord, sometimes I wish I still had Starletta. Last month, she took her hair out of plaits, and I had to say, Starletta, is that really you when I saw her at school? I figured she always would have the plaits, but that is because I always thought she would be little and fast forever. She has hit the growth spurt they talked about in my health book, and she is getting tall. She has been away from me for so long now, I feel like she grew behind my back, and when I think about her now, I want to press my hands to her to stop her from growing into a time she will not want to play. She told me during lunchtime one day she has a crush on a boy, and she pointed him out to me, and he was a sassy old white boy, and she would not listen to me tell her she would have to pick out another boy to love. She is very sweet on Tom the white boy. A boy is a boy to her, and this is the one she decided on. But I know Starletta is not a fool. Her body is growing fast, and so is her thinking. Nowadays, you can count on her to have some things figured out for her own self, but I still know her good enough to tell what is running through her head. It is no use to snag a colored boy, she would think, when the white ones are the ones that have the cars and the money to set you up in style. Why do I want to chop all day and make quilts all night, she would think, What can a colored boy bring me for a Valentine present but some cheap candy or some paper he cut out and glued into a heart? But that white boy Tom could tell his mama to pick up something nice in town, and she would put it on her account. That is the way Starletta was thinking. I know Starletta is getting an itch way down deep and low where a colored boy cannot afford to reach to scratch. I always think about her while I stand in the middle of the singing. The songs match whatever season we're in. Turkey in the Straw, Ghost, O Christmas Tree, Easter Lily Fair. If there is not a special season going on, we sing about America. I mean, they sing about America. I just move my lips and think about how sly I am. Starletta and I both keep list of what we need to tell each other. We started when I moved to Julia's. My list is usually more exciting than hers, but that is just because I can go to the movies and the grocery store. Hers might just say my daddy is building an inside-the-house toilet, or my mama has a boil on her neck. I wonder how long she will be interested in keeping the list with me, and something tells me inside that one of these days soon she will forget me. So I will have to make a big, very big good time with her that she will not forget when she is riding in a car with her white boy or dancing at his party. I know for a fact I would not ever forget her, but you can never be sure about how somebody else thinks about you except if they beat it into your head. At least that is how I am worried about Starletta, who has never said much good or bad to me, but before long, I will have to know I am in her head like she is in mine. It is good to have a friend like her. All the way home from school, I wonder if my new mama would let Starletta come to my house and spend the night. That is brave to think about because I am not sure if it has ever been done before. That is something big Starletta would never forget, and she would think back on me and how she stayed in the White House all night with Ellen. I wonder to myself, am I the same girl who would not drink after Starletta 2 years ago or eat a colored biscuit when I was starved? It is the same girl, but I am old now. I know it is not the germs you cannot see that slide off her lips and onto a glass, then to your white lips that will hurt you or turn you colored. What you had better worry about, though, is the people you know and trust that they would be like you because they were all made in the same batch. You need to look over your shoulder at the one who is in charge of holding you up and see if that is a knife he has in his hand. And it might not be a colored hand, but it is a knife. If you let somebody tell you anything else, you are a fool because what I have told you is right. My new mama squeezes me extra hard on Tuesday because she knows that is my tough day of the week. Every Tuesday I try to think of an exotic disease that will sound deadly enough to keep me out of school. That is the day when the man comes and asks me questions about the past. I always dread him. I walk behind him to the school nurse's office where he tells me to relax and less chat. The nurse is not there to listen in because that is the day she goes out in the field to give migrant babies booster shots. One day, though, she got back early and we caught her outside the office with her ear to the door. He always starts out the same with how important it is for me to relax and say what I feel. I do not think I have a problem, but he gets paid good money, I am sure, to find out whatever ails me and cure it. "So how are you today?" he always wants to know. "Fine," I always say back, nice and genuine as I can make it, because if I tell him the truth like I'd rather be digging a ditch than be here today, he asks me why I am defensive. And then he will not let go of a word, but he has to bend and pull and stretch what I said into something